Good Saturday morning to everybody. Welcome to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show, along with Director of Family Services, Chris Radlitz. I am Gary Byron. Chris, great to see you, my friend.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
A lot better now than I was for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I got the call that we weren't going to be able to get together for the show because you were feeling under the weather, and now I come to find out you got nailed with bronchitis.
I did, and I won't go too deep into the details, but what happened? My neck, only one side of my neck swelled out. Even the doctor said, I've only seen this a few times. I've seen swelling of the neck and lymph nodes get swelled. That's common, he says, but wow. How long have you let it go like this? And I said, really? I just noticed it yesterday, and so I'm here today.
So you were like the hunchneck of Farmington.
Of Newington.
Of Newington, sorry.
But what happened was on the inside is that it swelled also on the inside of my neck and my esophagus and my throat where I couldn't swallow. And I don't mean just food. I mean like saliva, just swallowing.
Gosh, I can't imagine that.
And it impeded on my vocal cords. So when I got up on Wednesday, I literally, I don't mean I spoke softly, I literally had no voice.
But you carried a big stick.
Yes, I did. Thanks, good. TR. So the doctor says to me, let's just get the swelling down, first and foremost, so that you can swallow and, you know, you can start to at least get some of your voice back. And then second thing, once we do that, let's find out what's caused this. So we took some tests and cultures and things like that, and he goes, you've got a bronchial infection. And you've got bronchial spasms. So he goes, you ever have bronchitis before? And I said, never. Of course, I've heard other people have it. I've heard of it and yada, yada, yada. I go, but I never had. He goes, all right, well, this is what you're going to do. You know, and he goes, you just spent the last 5 days, as I told you the first time that you came here, do not talk. You have to use pen and paper for 5 days. You can talk now, but talk only when necessary. And I go, you do understand what I do for a living. And he goes, we're not even talking about going back to work yet. So I was out for a week and a half. Yeah, and I got put on this inhaler, like you would see somebody with asthma have. You know, and I use it twice a day for the bronchial spasms, and I guess really they work. And I had a fever of the week and a half. I probably had it for a week, and it finally that broke.
Seriously, well, yeah, if it's an infection, I guess you would have. Wow.
And I would go from having chills to, you know, to being 900, felt like I had 900 degrees. Look, I prayed to God. He listened to my prayers, obviously, because I got healed up pretty quickly.
Chalk one up for the big guy.
Relatively speaking, you know, a week and a half is nothing compared to what I thought it could be. Because I started Googling some of this. It could last up to a month, but I'm not a smoker and never had been a smoker. And he goes, this is going to help you greatly. You're going to be on the lower end. He goes, 2 weeks. And it was a week and a half. So,
well, that's great.
So that
you
was,
sound good. I mean, you don't have any, you know, nothing, no residual effects that I can tell.
But Chris, it's great to see you as well. I mean, we could have done things. Well, I couldn't have talked, but I mean, we've done things on the radio. But it's great. On telephone. But it's great to have you in studio. And
I'm glad to be here because it's always a pleasure to stop in and visit with my favorite morning show host.
Oh, shucks. Hey, really quickly, before we get into the nitty-gritty of this morning's topic, let's talk about some housekeeping issues. Maybe you can tell our listeners about some scheduled DOLs that are coming up. And I know there's a financial offer that the CCA has been offering families of the Archdiocese.
Yeah, and I tell you, the Dignity of Life seminars, that's just something we're just so proud of because they've been such a wonderful addition to the to the program that we have for families of the Archdiocese. And basically what it does is it's an opportunity to bring together the Cemetery Association, the funeral homes, long-term care people, as well as elder care attorneys and probate judges, and have a chance to talk about all the different things that are applicable to each of our areas of expertise. Families get to ask questions that they get answered immediately. And it's just super, super educational, super informative. We've been doing them for about 3.5 years now, almost 4 years, and they've been really successful for people. Everybody loves them. So it's always a pleasure, and thanks for asking about them. We have one Tuesday, March 1st at Sacred Heart Cemetery in Meriden. Mm-hmm. That's at 5:30 p.m. And we have another one on Tuesday, March 8th, also at Sacred Heart Cemetery, and that's going to be in Meriden at 4:30. In reference to the financial offering you were talking about, from now until the end of March, the association is offering a financial incentive to help families. Mm. So if you make a purchase of a tandem crypt, you save $750. If you purchase a single crypt, you save $500. And for the purchase of two graves, you save $150. So that's it's a pretty nice incentive that mm-hmm. we're offering to families during the month of March. And I hope that it's helpful to them and they'll be able to take advantage of it.
Wonderful. Wow, that sounds like that's actually a pretty good deal. Is that offered just once a year? Or
usually that comes out around once a year that we'll have that kind of an offering. It's not, and it's no guarantee that it'll happen every year, but, you know, this just seems to be I don't know about you, but have you seen inflation lately?
Oh, how do you not? It affects everything. You can buy a loaf of bread and it affects that.
All right, I'm not going to name the chain that I stopped in to get a cup of coffee one time because I was desperate. But I went in, I get a cup of coffee, and I, you know me, I like my vanilla latte, right?
Yeah.
Sugar-free. So I walk in, I get it, and I wasn't really paying attention, and then she tells me how much it is, and it's $7.10. And I stopped, and I said, excuse me? I said, I just got a coffee. She says, yeah, it's $7.10. I said, okay. And I paid it, and I walked out, and I said, well, okay, not only am I never coming back here again, but holy smokes, what has happened to the price of things? I mean, I do shopping. I do know food's gone through the roof. You know, God forbid you like steaks. I mean, you have to try and get a second mortgage out to enjoy a good steak meal.
Isn't it crazy?
I mean, yeah, it's just crazy. So anyway.
And there's no end in sight.
No, there isn't. But so I'm really happy that, you know, we're able to offer something to help ease the burden on family.
I'm happy. And the timing of it couldn't be better. Can you believe March 1st is already Tuesday? You were just mentioned about March 1st in your first Dignity of Life seminar.
Yeah.
But wow, oh my goodness, March 1st already.
Didn't we just start the year?
Exactly. That's my point.
Could have sworn I just opened a Christmas present.
Right. You know, we spent some time talking about prayer a few weeks ago. And I know we're coming up on the Lent season in just about a week. So let's talk a little bit about the Stations of the Cross and what a great way to pray. And I know that you can follow a story of Christ's passion. And we've talked about how the church used art and paintings to tell the story of Christ in pre-literacy days. Every church has the stations. I do know that. And if we, I don't know, maybe if we have time, maybe you can offer some other ways to pray and make sacrifices during the Lent season. Maybe we can start with the Stations of the Cross. How about that?
Well, sure. Stations of the Cross basically depict 14 events in the Passion of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins with Jesus being condemned to death, and it ends with his body being laid in the tomb. So the pious practice of praying the Stations of the Cross originated in medieval Europe when pilgrims who were unable to visit the Holy Land so instead visited, in quotation marks, these holy places through prayer. St. Francis of Assisi, the founder of the Franciscan order, he authored the Stations of the Cross that really popularized the devotion throughout the world. And today you'll find, as you said, the Stations of the Cross in almost every Catholic church, particularly prayed on Lenten Fridays. But it's available throughout the year for meditation and reflection. At each station, the individual recalls and meditates on a specific event from Christ's last day. Specific prayers are recited, then the individual moves to the next station until all 14 are complete. And I'll tell you something, the church puts such great value on this that they actually offer a plenary indulgence for people who stay the Stations of the Cross in earnest during Lent. They'll get a plenary indulgence, which plenary indulgence, of course, meaning that if you complete all the requisites for it, you will actually, the punishment due for your sins will be remediated by God. So plenary indulgence is kind of a big deal, and it's really a beautiful thing that the church has this available for us that'll help us. Anything that we can do to eliminate the punishment that's due for the goofy things we do in life is pretty helpful. And the Stations of the Cross are pretty cool because they're usually found in churches, like in a series of small icons around the church.
I see them.
So they're small. Some are small. Some are a little bit larger, but what's really interesting is that there's some that are made from sculptures of metal, wood, carved stone. Some of them are outside. If you take a look at All Saints Cemetery in North Haven, Connecticut, one of our cemeteries, our corporate headquarters actually, there's acres of ground dedicated to the Stations of the Cross. And at each station, you can pray, you know, all the prayers at each station, but there also happens to be thousands of people around buried that, you know. So it's kind of a nice, if an individual has a particular affinity for a particular station, they can, when they choose their final resting place, they can actually be buried at the Stations of the Cross. So the erection of the stations really didn't become a major thing until the 17th century. But like you said, now it's found in just about every church. Started off with, I think, 7, and then it went all the way up to 30, and then it wasn't until like 1783 or something, and it was brought down to 14.
30?
Yeah. Yeah, they had, there was all different ones that they'd thrown in there.
Can they just arbitrarily do that? Or?
Well, remember, this was during the development of this idea, so it wasn't a church doctrine at the time that this is the official Stations of the Cross. It was, these are a devotion that people are praying, which was really from medieval Europe. And as the devotion gained in popularity, that's when the church stepped in to say, well, let's formalize it. And they came up with the 14, which are the ones that we know today.
Yeah. A little bit of history here.
Yeah.
So you've explained what they are, what each individual of the 14, right? I mean,
I didn't really talk about each of the individual ones at this point, really just kind of a little bit about what they are and where they came from. But I think that if we talk a little bit more about what they mean, we really have to list kind of what they are.
Each of them is a description of Jesus's life, each of the 14, right?
Well, it's a description of his last day on earth.
Last day on earth. Okay. Yeah.
So, okay. For instance, the first one, Jesus is condemned to death. So when Pontius Pilate says, you know, you're going to be crucified.
Are you talking about when he was up on, wasn't Barabbas on one side and he was on the other and Pontius Pilate was in the middle? And
right, and they said, which one do you want? They took Barabbas,
and then
Christ was taken and he was scourged at the pillar and then crucified.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So the second station is Jesus takes up his cross. And that's when he's, because back in the days when the Romans, which by the way, probably the most horrific means of dying is to be crucified, because not only do they drive nails through your hands and your feet, but they hang you on this cross and you basically drown in your own fluids because your body can't handle.
It's a slow death.
It's a painful, slow, horrible death. Anyway. But what they used to do was, before they did this to you, they would make you carry that cross that you're going to be nailed to up to the point where they're going to nail it, okay? So the second station is Jesus takes up his cross. The third is he falls for the first time. The fourth is Jesus meets his mother. The fifth, Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry the cross. The sixth is Veronica wipes the face of Jesus. The seventh, Jesus falls for the second time. In the eighth, Jesus meets the women of Jerusalem. The ninth, Jesus falls for the third time. The tenth, Jesus is stripped of his garments. Sometimes it's called the division of robes. The 11th, Jesus is nailed to the cross. The 12th, Jesus dies on the cross. The 13th, Jesus is taken down from the cross. And then the last, Jesus is laid in the tomb to rest. So, you know, it's kind of a morose set of devotions.
Emotional.
Very emotional.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. If you haven't prayed the station, because there's a series of prayers that go with each station. And it's not, they're not like long or detailed. They're just these short little blurbs. And it talks about the impact of that station on Christ and on us. And it's very short. It is so emotional. And you sing the Te Adoremus a little bit at the beginning and at the end of each station. I'll tell you something. If Catholics out there haven't gone to the stations in many, many years, just about every church does the Stations of the Cross at 3 o'clock on Lenten Fridays. And then sometimes they'll do it again at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening for those people that are working. I would strongly recommend that you go. Not so much even for your own piety as it is to try and understand, I guess, what the emotional aspect is of what he actually did for us. Because that whole thing really centers around the greatest commandment, which he said, told us, is to love one another. And he gave us the ultimate sign of love by going through this entire thing.
And feeling the pain where you would think that you're the Son of God you would think you'd be shielded and protected, but no, he was human. And he felt everything. And I hope you forgive me, but you know what? My mind, it just goes to the, was it Jim Caviezel movie?
Yeah.
Passion of the Christ. Where I think I cried my eyes out from beginning to end. It was just so emotional for me. I own the DVD. I try to watch it once a year if I'm able, you know, if I'm able to. Sometimes I have the time and I'm like, I don't think I can muster. Maybe I'll take this year off, you know, and not watch it. But I've seen it a number of times and it's just as emotional the last time as it was the first time.
I've never been to a movie theater.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
And I watched the movie and the credits came. The screen went blank. Nobody moved. Nobody said a word. Mm. And all you heard was little sniffles.
Yeah. I didn't see it at the movie theater. I bought the DVD. I bought the DVD when it came out and watched it alone.
So I watch it every year for Easter, but I'm at the point that I can't watch all of it. There are certain parts of that movie that draw too much emotion out of me, and I just can't deal with it.
I relate to that.
You know, here I am, this big guy, you know, played college ball, Division I ball, all this stuff. That movie will knock me to my knees. And it's just, and it's, you know, it's a fairly, I mean, it's supposed to be a fairly accurate description of what happened. And you know, it's not like this hasn't been documented. The Via Dolorosa, which is the way of the cross, that's in Jerusalem, that's what it's called, this path that Jesus took as he marched to his ultimate demise, is it's very well known. The different things that happened to him along the way are very well documented. And yet, when you put it all together and you experience it in that one evening of doing the stations, you know, or in one afternoon, whenever you choose to do them, there's such a powerful feeling that, I mean, just me reading those to you right now was getting to me, you know? Mm-hmm. It was getting to me. And I guess, you know, is it because I'm Catholic? Maybe, I don't know. Wow. It's, but the thought of what this God man did for our salvation was just beyond the scope of belief and reality. I mean, how does somebody put up with this? And that the part that I can't watch is the scourging of the pillar, by the way.
Sure.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I see that and I just, every time that guy flicked that thing, I cringed.
Took out
and
the hunks of... Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Now, here, let me tell you
the
something interesting.
The acting and the effects on that movie were incredible. Was it Mel Gibson that made that movie?
He was the director.
He was
the director. Through a series of... I happen to know Jim Caviezel, okay? And it just... Yeah, just...
Really?
Yeah, long story. Anyway.
Sometime in the next 2 weeks, I got to hear some of this. But go ahead.
Anyway, when he was filming that scene over multiple days, they actually had a metal plate on his back, okay? And the metal plate was covered with the artificial skin and the fat and all that stuff. So that, because they were actually using the real metal things that the Romans used. So when they would hit and tear the skin, it was hitting him, but he had that metal plate. The guys that were doing it one time missed, and they hit him, and they grabbed a hunk of his skin off his shoulder, and he refused to give up or stop the shooting because he felt that there was just so much realism in what had just happened. And his words were, if he could do for me what he did, I can suffer for what he did for a short period of time.
Incredible to hear that.
I mean, you know, which is just amazing. He got struck by lightning hanging on the cross during the filming, believe it or not.
Jim Caviezel.
There was all kinds of things that were going on during the filming of that movie. So, anyway.
Folks, you're listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show along with the Chris Radlitz. I'm Gary Byron. You can check him out online at the www.ccacem.org. I'll give you some toll-free number, email addresses more towards the end of the show. Chris, what are some of the more modern usages of the stations in today's Catholic rituals?
Well, sure. I mean, today in the Roman Catholic Church, devotion can be conducted personally by the faithful. So any day you can walk into a church and you can just do the Stations of the Cross on your own. There's usually a little booklet somewhere that you can grab, or maybe you have your own. It's a short little thing. It's not like it's a big book.
Right.
And you go through and do the stations on your own. Or, like I said, during Lent in particular on Fridays at 3 o'clock and usually sometime in the evening, the Stations of the Cross are formally done within the churches, which is a great devotion, as we've talked about. And that's where the celebrant, the priest or deacon, will actually move from station to station, lead the group in the prayers. The people do certain answers. Pope John Paul II actually used to do an annual public prayer, the Stations of the Cross, on Good Friday at the Roman Colosseum. He would actually walk around the Roman Colosseum doing the Stations of the Cross. And originally, when he was a younger pope, he carried the cross himself. So he would actually carry this cross on his back while doing the Stations of the Cross, which was, I thought, kind of interesting. But just days prior to his death in 2005, Pope John Paul II observed that the Stations of the Cross, for each individual, are one of the most powerful prayers that anybody can do, because it so recognizes the sacrifice that was made out of love. And, you know, that goes back to that whole concept of love. We look at the stations and say they're horrific. Yet do we understand that it's all because of the love of God for us that he suffered the way he did? And that's really what it came down to. So, and Pope John Paul in particular, I'm not saying any other pope didn't know, but in particular, he expressed this view many times, so that the celebration of the station should be something that is common, hopefully, in our Catholic faith, and something that, even though we seem to reserve for the Lenten time of year, is something we should never be too far from. Because every time you go to church, you see him on the wall.
Right.
Don't forget it. You know, it's not just an ornament.
Right, it's not just decoration. Yeah.
It's something. It's there for a reason. So, you know, no matter where you're sitting, what pew you're in, where, you know, look to the wall and see what station's there. Think about that just for a minute and contemplate it, you know?
So there are everyday life lessons that the stations can teach us how to live a better Christian life.
Well, you know, if you're a Catholic Christian, you know that trying to live the life of a disciple is not going to be easy. Look at what happened to the first 12.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
I mean, they all died, with the exception of St. John, who died of a natural death in the island of Patmos. They all died horrific deaths. Okay? All for Christ and for their faith, which, if you think about it, you know. So Christ told his disciples that they have to take on life suffering as it's a form of capital punishment, and they'd later, you know, ultimately take his own life. So... Mm. And he always said, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. That's from the book of Luke. And that's really what it means. So having that as the background, we think about, well, what's the rest of it mean? Well, it's kind of really about suffering, too. Because it's not only the love that he showed us by doing it, but it's also what he suffered. And why is that suffering important? And how is that an example for us in our daily lives, everyday lessons that the stations teaches us? Well, Christ's cross makes sense of our own universal appeal to not suffer. So this transformation of his from suffering to love, which is what he did, is something that we have to take to heart. I mentioned earlier that the stations really takes its root from the Franciscans, who helped build these pilgrimage sites all over the world because people were not able to get to the actual Holy Land. And each station had a very specific role and played a very important part in helping the faithful understand just how much Christ suffered for us.
Mm.
The universal reality of suffering makes this devotion inspiring, I think, to us from a very broad perspective. Anyway.
What a great way, you know, to have something on a personal or even a public level of prayer during the Lent season. I've only got really about a minute and a half, 2 minutes tops. Can you give our listeners some other ideas that may help us choose a plan of sacrifice during Lent?
Well, I want to harp back a little bit just on the fact that we talk so much about how the suffering related to love. Okay. Because that to me is, I think, that's the ultimate expression of Christ's care, desire, love for us.
I agree.
By enduring the pain, the suffering that he did. It also showed great obedience because it was the obedience of the Father's will. And here he was, God. And he said, okay, you know. The night before this happened, what did he do? If there's any way, take this cup from me, okay? But your will be done. How many of us in our daily lives say, your will be done? How many times do we face difficulties where we say, God, what did you do this for? How'd you let this happen? Okay? And especially when we never have talked to him other times.
No, that's not
right. You know? So then we're saying all these. So to me, it's really important. But when we go through the Lenten time, I think one of the biggest things that we can do, and I know people hate to hear this, fasting. Fasting is one of the most powerful means of self-growth spiritually, as well as a method of prayer for someone else. I'll tell you a quick story. I don't know how much time.
Really, right? I only have about 1 minute.
All right. Little kid, 7, 8 years old, birthday party, got hurt, jabbed, had to go to the hospital.
Ooh.
They went in to fix up his, I think it was his spleen that was smashed or something. They find out the kid's got stage 4 liver cancer. Okay? Stage 4 liver cancer. I didn't know the kid. But I heard the story at a Knights of Columbus meeting. And look, I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm just telling you, this is why fasting is important. I decided at that moment I got to fast. And I fasted for 14 days.
Just water?
Just water. Okay? It was not as bad as you would think it would be. Because my goal was, I'm doing this for this kid. He went back a couple of weeks later for some follow-up stuff. Completely gone.
Completely
healed. No traces, anything. So, yeah, fasting, very important.
Folks, I strongly suggest check out the website. It's www.ccacem.org. That's for the Catholic Cemeteries Association. By the way, if you've got a question, maybe we can get this answered on these very airwaves as soon as even next week. Simply email ccawdrc@gmail.com. Once again, that's ccawdrc@gmail.com. And if you'd like to make an appointment with the Catholic Cemeteries Association, very easy to do. They've got a toll-free number. It's 800-505-0050. Let me repeat that for you. It's toll-free, 800-505-0050. For Chris Radlitz, Director of Family Services for the Catholic Cemeteries Association, I'm Gary Byron. Until next Saturday, have a good one, everybody. So long.